It's been record-breaking how little snow has fallen this winter so far. They told us in Chicago, well, Jitendra, who's like the statistician and historian of the temple, said since the beginning of when they began keeping track of weather conditions in Chicago, there is less snow this year in Chicago than since the beginning of keeping records. Perhaps something similar here. And then here we are. One day we have something and there's all this snow. It's good for the for other purposes, not for having gatherings though. The theme of how we'll spend our time together today is on the topic of Vaishnava relationships. In fact, I'm hoping this will be a theme for the year. Vaishnava relationships, strengthening Vaishnava relationships. So, I'm going to speak something and then turn the program over to Jagatananda, who will lead you in some interactive workshop type of things on the same theme. Now, I'm going to go in a particular direction that may not be the same direction specific to relationships, but that's okay because it's all part of the package of strengthening relationships. And the topic that I'd like to discuss is the importance of respect in relationships. Take it very in a very broad perspective. Something that I have said many times. So say it at the front end of this presentation. Without respect, then you don't have a relationship. With respect, mutual respect, then there can be a relationship. Say, between a friend and a friend, or in a marriage, between a husband and wife. When there's respect, things can get worked out. When respect breaks down, it's very difficult, to say the least. Or it becomes the finger-pointing game. Why do you do this? Well, why do you expect me to do this when you do that? And it's your fault. And the relationship erodes and eventually breaks between friend and friend, and it can happen over all kinds of things. Commonly is money and other worldly things, but respect is something that's very fundamental in relationships. It goes to the intrinsic worth of the individual. And one thing that's fundamental to all individuals is that we're spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna. And because respect goes to Krishna, respect goes to the parts and parcels of Krishna. So that's everybody. Even bad people, they're part and parcel of Krishna. I've shared this before, something that when I was young, I struggled with. which was the teaching in the Bible that says you're to love your neighbor as yourself. And the problem I had was I saw many people doing many things that were not lovable. So how could I love someone who just isn't lovable? And I tried. I tried to understand how to do it and tried to do it, and it just didn't connect. But the basic problem was, well, two basic problems. One was I was looking at the behavior, not at the soul. The behavior wasn't lovable, but the soul is. And that's another teaching in the Bible, hate the sin, not the sinner. But then the deeper issue is love of God. Because before love your neighbor as yourself, it's love God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and that connection wasn't there. And so the spiritual conception of the other individual wasn't there, and so I was seeing the other individuals by their behaviors. Some of them more lovable and some of them less. And some of them awful. And some of them very lovable. But just in terms of behaviors and not seeing the spiritual spark, the part and parcel of Krishna. So that's maybe a stretch for sadhakas to look at one another as spirit souls. Because that sounds a little high. Pandita samadarshana vidya vanaya sampani brahmani gavihastani shuni chaiva supaki cha pandita samadarshana. Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita. A pandit, a learned person, sama darshana. Sama, equal. Darshana, sees. They see living beings equally. Seeing, Prabhupada, in explaining this verse, seeing living beings equally is on the spiritual platform while at the same time recognizing material distinctions. He gave the example, when you see a lion, you don't go and embrace the lion. You're finished. You behave appropriate for the embodiment of the living being. You recognize distinctions, but you see equally. It's a subtle, perhaps, but very important matter. Seeing a person and how you interact with the person. And the fundamental seeing on our topic of relationships, it's with respect. Amongst all the living beings that are part and parcel of Krishna, there's trees and there's birds and there's insects and there's worms and there's butterflies and there's people and there's animals, cats and dogs and all types of animals. In the backyard, there's no yard. In the back of the St. Louis Temple, there's a possum. You ever seen a possum before? They're very strange looking. They have this long snout and the big nose at the end of the long snout and kind of furry guy. And I was told, I saw one of them because I was going up the back stairway, like the fire escape, because that's how you know, one way to get into the temple. And there was a possum up on top of the fire escape taking prasadam peacefully. Because one of the temple devotees, he knows, you know, at night, he's the night prowler possum, and he puts some prasadam out in the possum nose. So he was up there, and he didn't even move when he saw me come. He just looked and just went back to eating prasadam. Because he's used to being treated, you know, nicely. He took, you know, I got a good look at his long nose. And then I would ask, you know, does he live here or what? I said, well, there's two of them. There's a big one. I guess it's the mama possum and then the baby possum. But the baby possum is pretty big, grown up now. their spirit souls too. But we relate to the living entities in a different way, appropriate for their form of life, but intrinsic is the soul, and amongst all the souls that we have basic respect for, there's another intrinsic value in a devotee. And a devotee is one who has some attraction for Krishna and is on the path of trying to strengthen their relationship with Krishna, restore their relationship with Krishna, at least making an effort in their life to do so. So respect goes there. And for most of us, probably all of us, we're less than perfect devotees. So along with the package of some attraction for Krishna, there's the modes of nature, there's strengths and there's weaknesses, there's the package in which the soul is situated, the psychophysical nature. In Sanskrit, it's swabhava. The cumulative effect over so many bodies, so many lifetimes of having different bodies, where there's a psychological and a physical set of impulses born of the modes of material nature and one's past karma that make up the package. But inside the package is the soul, and the soul has some attraction for Krishna. So respect goes not higher or lower on the spiritual platform, not higher or lower for the particular packaging, but higher or lower according to the degree to which that soul in this lifetime is sincerely striving to restore that relationship with Krishna. By birth, one may be down here. By birth, one may be up here, as far as swabhava is concerned. But from the spiritual perspective, the endeavor of the soul to reach Krishna sincerely, whatever limitation the one down here may have, whatever advantage the one up here may have, it's the sincerity of their endeavor. That's the spiritual perspective. Which means to someone that's less advantaged by the packaging they got, the swabhava, the sum total of all of their previous, not only this lifetime, but so many lifetimes of involvements with material nature, they may have more resource, less resource. And we can look at that, more resource, less resource, but the respect goes, especially from a spiritual perspective, to how that resource is being utilized, or the sincerity that's behind how the resource is being utilized. People that write about this topic of respect make two major distinctions, categorical distinctions. One is respect is something that you do, and the other is respect is something that you feel. And my understanding is, and experience is, what's inside comes out. So what's most important is what's inside. That kind. And respect, other than for the soul, now I'm going away directly from the spiritual conception to a little bit more worldly conception. The whole topic of ethics, like Mahabharata, is about ethics, good and bad, right and wrong, theism and atheism, morality, immorality, values, ethics. I mean, they have so many books written on ethics and courses on ethics and so on. And people that act unethically, they're not appreciated in this world. They end up in the penalty box. And people that are ethical, sometimes they look, oh, you're a loser, because you're being taken advantage of by all these unethical people out there. But dharma raksha rakshataha, the Manu Samhita teaches us, those who abide by dharma, they're protected by dharma. They are not protected by the unethical people. The unethical people may try to exploit the ethical people. But the ethical people, because of their convictions and their shelter in principles of dharma, they feel protected. And they are protected. Short term is one thing. The unethical persons, it's the classic good and evil plot or theme in stories, novels, dramas, movies, you know, just like, you know, Romeo and Juliet, the love between the lover and beloved. So similarly, the struggle between good and evil. And it's pervasive. So those who take shelter of values and live by them, commonly respect goes there. The Pandavas earned respect because of their being situated in dharma, headed principally by the son of Yamaraj himself, the lord of dharma, the punisher of the wrongdoers, and he who would always upheld dharma, he who would never lie, he who always lived by dharma. So many of the plots of the Mahabharata are centered around Yudhisthira's decisions, prudent decisions based upon dharma, and the practical application of the principles of dharma. There's one section I was just reading recently where Bhishma Dev had taken a vow that he would not marry. And he, being a Kshatriya, he kept his vow. That's virtue. You say something, you keep your word. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta, from a small boy, took a mango. His father rebuked him. Oh, you've taken a mango that's not been offered to the deity. Little boy, I'm an offender. I won't take mango for the rest of my life. Little boy. And for the rest of his life, he never took mango, even as a great acharya, who, you know, Mahabhagavata Vaishnav, chanted 300,000, the same amount of chanting as Haridas Thakur every day, for something like 9 years, to chant his 9 billion names, or one billion names of the Lord. He showed that he was above the restrictions of dharma, but he upheld his vow that I won't take mango because I'm an offender. And it wasn't just something that was a show-off. I can keep my vow. It was, he felt he was bound by his vow. So Bhishma had taken a vow, I shall not marry. And another time he took another vow. Here's 5 arrows. Before the sun sets tomorrow, I will destroy the 5 Pandavas with these 5 arrows. So by cleverness and by Leela, Krishna had Arjuna go and take those five arrows. Because he had been given a promise by Duryodhana. You can take anything from me. Take anything it is that you wish. And Arjuna's reply was later. So Krishna remembered it, told Arjuna, go get the five arrows. He said, now, just ask him, do you remember that incident with the Gandharva? You gave me your promise? So he went to get fulfill the promise and took the five arrows. So he who never breaks his vow had his vow broken. Bhishma couldn't fulfill his vow. By the end of tomorrow, I'll kill the Pandavas because the arrows were gone. So Krishna made Bhishma Dev made Krishna break his vow. But I will not fight. So I was, someone helped me actually, doing some research on what was that incident that Duryodhana gave a vow, a promise, and he upheld it. He was an atheist that upheld his vow. And his vow was, the event was, the Pandavas were in a distant place. And Duryodhana conspired to get them. It's a long intrigue, involving intrigue. And when he came, Gandharvas intervened. And they went to protect the Pandavas because they saw that Duryodhana was so mean-spirited, so vicious, so against the principles of ethics and virtue, that he personally destroyed, beat to a pulp Duryodhana and his buddies. Arjuna, who Duryodhana had gone to destroy him, intervened and fought against the Gandharva. And defeated the Gandharva. Well, he didn't exactly. The Gandharva was so pleased with the chivalry that here's a person who is being attacked by this vicious person, and he's defending him because he's his cousin. And he's such a valiant, virtuous person. He praised Arjuna and told Duryodhana, "It's because of him I'm going to let you go." And Duryodhana felt defeated. He was so humiliated. His buddies, he said to, "Better I just commit suicide. Just what's the use of life? I went to destroy, the person I went to destroy saved me." But he gave Arjuna this promise. Whatever it is that you want, it's yours. Just see the nature of this person. The person who saved his life. He just, within hours, it turned around to let me destroy him. Because he was ready to give up his life, and his friend said, "No, the real problem is them. Just get rid of them and you're okay." "Yeah, get rid of them and everything will be okay." So respect goes to one who is virtuous. And we could list the things that we might respect in somebody who is a devotee. I'll just name a couple. This is the 40th anniversary for the installation of Rukmini Dwarkadish in Los Angeles and Radhakala Chanji in Dallas and Radha Govinda in New York. And I know, because I've spent time with each of those three persons, Swabhas in Los Angeles, Nityananda in Dallas, and Ramabhadra in New York, what their plans are for observing the 40th anniversary of the installation of the deities. They're all done the same year when Prabhupada was present, and they're absorbed in thinking how to glorify their respective worshipable deity. All their festivals are big festivals specifically focused on the deity. So, boy, that gets my respect, because that's what's in their heart, and they have a relationship with the deity, and they're absorbed. Respect goes to that. So, respect simply because they're a spirit soul. Respect because they're carrying devotion for Krishna. Respect because they're exhibiting that devotion for Krishna in such a wonderful way. Or in our central New Jersey ISKCON temple, they really went at it at the Prabhupada book distribution marathon, as did Potomac, but I know more about the one in central New Jersey. They distributed sets of Srimad Bhagavatams in the number something like 160. Do you know what the number is?
138.
Wow. Sets of Srimad Bhagavatam. One person alone distributed or sold 60 Bhagavatam sets. And many of them in Gujarati, but hey, 60 in 1 month. When you distribute a set of Bhagavatams to one person in the course of a year, it's yay! 60 in 1 month. And 138 for the whole month, for the whole temple. I was in Houston during the Christmas month, during the December month, and the home programs that I attended, they were very happily, two of them were Srimad Bhagavatam installation functions. And they were really happy. They're nice families. And I said, you know, many of you are disciples of Tamal Krishna Maharaj here in Houston. And I know how competitive Tamal Krishna Maharaj was in the area of book distribution. I just want you to know that so far, you've distributed 5 sets in this month of December, but that little place that they don't even have deities yet, they don't even have a place of worship yet, they're just getting started. They're over 100 sets of Bhagavatams already. You guys better start working out here in Houston. Or I'm going to write a letter to Tamal Krishnamurti and tell him he's way down in second, third, fourth, fifth place. Because Tamal Krishnamurti was very competitive. So those efforts, naturally, respect. And so on. Somebody is an honest person. Somebody is a trustworthy person. Someone keeps their word. Something that says, some embellishment or some opulence that Krishna has given somebody. And wow, or someone that's just simply very humble. And they're so humble. You're just overwhelmed with their humility. Badahari is such an example. Besides, he sings very nicely. A little association with him, it's melting how humble he is. However elevated he can do things, his humility is so disarming and charming and enchanting. Respect. But it's not just those persons that exhibit things in a superlative way, I respect them. That's something, again, it's something that you feel, and from that something you feel, there's the way you speak and the way you behave, how you respond to things, how you may reach out to them or just smile when you see them, or something, even smile in your heart, even you're troubled with something that's going on in your heart, there's a something that you feel, and it's respect. So there's a nice verse, so many nice verses, but there's one nice verse that I'm going to refer to. In Krishna's teachings to Uddhava, in the Uddhava Gita section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 28, texts 1 and 2, where Krishna is speaking to Uddhava about praise or criticize. Here's what the verse says. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one should neither praise nor criticize the conditioned nature and activities of other persons. Rather, one should see this world as simply the combination of material nature and the enjoying souls, all based on the one absolute truth. I'll read the first paragraph of the purport. Material situations and activities appear to be good, passionate, or ignorant according to the interaction of the modes of nature. These modes are produced by the illusory potency of the Lord, which is itself not different from its master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, a devotee of the Lord remains aloof from the illusory temporary manifestations of material nature. At the same time, he accepts material nature as a potency of the Lord, and thus essentially real. Example. The example may be given that modeling clay is shaped by a child into various playful forms, such as tigers, men, or houses. The modeling clay is real, whereas the temporary shapes it assumes are illusory, not being actual tigers, men, or houses. Similarly, the entire cosmic manifestation is modeling clay in the hands of the Supreme Lord, who acts through Maya to shape the glaring temporary forms of illusion which absorb the minds of those who are not devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Next verse, text 2, chapter 28. Whoever indulges in praising or criticizing the qualities and behavior of others will quickly become deviated from his own best interest by his entanglement in illusory dualities. The Sanskrit is asat abhinivashita. You know what asat means. It's the opposite of sat. Reality is sat, and asat is illusion, or temporary, that which is temporary. And that which is temporary is now you see it, now you don't. It's illusory. And abhinivashita is being entangled in that duality of asat. Abhinivashita. So praise Oh, you can sing so nicely. Oh, you can dance so nicely. Oh, you serve the deity so nicely, from these other examples. Oh, you can cook so nicely. Oh, you can speak so nicely. You can do something so nicely. And then the criticize. Generally, we don't speak to the person, we speak about the person to another person. That person, yada, yada, yada. They cook terribly. They can't sing if their life depended on it. You see the way they dressed the deity this morning? Boy. And so on. So, Krishna is instructing Uddhava, don't do that. Neither praise nor criticize. Because specific is two things, the externals basically, the qualities, that's guna, the mode of nature by which someone is being impelled, and the behaviors. The behaviors come from qualities. Swabhava, brahma karma swabhavajam, kshatriya karma swabhavajam, vaishya karma swabhavajam. From the qualities that we carry come behaviors. So that's all external. And if you see the person according to the externals and you praise or criticize the externals, and that means you've forgotten the soul, then you're... The consequence, Krishna says, is that you quickly become deviated from your own interest. And what's your own interest? What is our real self-interest? The real self-interest is self-realization or awakening of our true spiritual identity. That becomes covered, or we become disconnected from it. We fall into Maya. We're lost. This verse is referred to in the story of Ramchandra Puri. So because of time, I'm not going to narrate the whole Ramchandra Puri story, but it's narrated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Ramchandra Puri, Paramananda Puri, Ishwara Puri, Advaita Acharya. Coming up at the end of this month, we'll be observing the appearance day of Advaita Acharya. They were all disciples of Madhavendra Puri. And of those, Brahmananda Bharati is another. So there's five, and of those five, all that are mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita were very exalted devotees, except one. And the one was Ramchandra Puri. Ramchandra Puri had direct association, well actually there's two more mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Kashishvara and Govinda, the two that were sent by Ishwara Puri to go and serve Lord Chaitanya. So, out of the seven, six of them were very, very elevated through their service to Madhavendra Puri, but Ramchandra Puri was rejected by Madhavendra Puri because he had taint of Mayavad-ism, Mayavad philosophy. He was interested in Brahman, and when he heard Madhavendra Puri speaking in a mood of intense devotion, in feelings of separation from Krishna, he didn't understand it. So he instructed his spiritual master, "Why are you lamenting? You're an elevated person. Just meditate on Brahman. Just remember Brahman." And the verse from Bhagavad Gita, Nasochati Nakangsati, Brahmabhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangsati, Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. So, He's instructing him. Ramchandra Puri is instructing Madhavendra Puri, his spiritual master. Why are you feeling sorry? You're a transcendentalist. And transcendentalists don't lament. Why are you lamenting? Just fix your consciousness on Brahman. He's a Brahmavadi or a Mayavadi. So Madhavendra Puri said, please leave this place at once. I never want to see you ever again. If I see your face at the time of dying, surely I'll not achieve the goal of my life. You can go wherever you like. Just don't let me see you again. And from that offense and the reaction to that offense, material desires became very prominent in the heart of Ramchandra Puri. But he was very strict in his practices, so what happened was he became a fault finder. That's how his reaction was manifested, by further offending of devotees. He became a very expert offender of devotees. Very expert. And wherever he went, his business was to examine the behavior and the routines of the devotees and find fault with them and speak about those faults. So he did that even with Lord Chaitanya. And so he came once to Lord Chaitanya's Gambira. Maybe some of you have been there. A little tiny place where Lord Chaitanya stayed, and he saw some ants on the ground. He said, aha! You had sugar cane or rock candy in your place last night. Now there's so many, you're eating too many sweets, so many ants. Look at this. A sannyasi's vows will be spoiled if he eats too many sweets. Lord Chaitanya had heard of his criticism here and there and all around Puri. Now it was heard about it third hand, now it was first hand. So Lord Chaitanya told Govinda and Kashishwara, from today on, I will only eat half of what I normally accept, and if you don't honor that, you won't see me here anymore. So people want to provide prasad, half. And you can take the other half. And if you want to, if you're still hungry, you can go somewhere else and receive your something else. So everyone heard this report and they were very unhappy. They sent Lord Chaitanya's godbrother, Paramananda Puri, who Lord Chaitanya had great respect for. And Paramananda Puri explained that this Ramchandra Puri, he knows this verse that Krishna spoke to Uddhava, and there's two parts to it. One is one should not praise, and the other is that one should not criticize. Listen carefully, this is very nice instruction. While both things are there, there's a technical rule that says the one that's mentioned first has lesser importance, the one that's mentioned second has greater importance. Just like, he didn't say this, but just like in Bhagavad Gita, there's so many instructions that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita. And the last instruction that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, that's the conclusion. That's the most important. Sarva dharmam. I've explained so many this dharma, that dharma. Now, sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. Just like you may be having some conversation, you make so many points, and then there's the conclusion. And the conclusion is the most important. So, Paramananda Puri said that Ramchandra Puri, he's very expert at not praising anybody. But he's negligent in the second one, which is of greater importance. And Prabhupada explains this in the commentary, that between the two, one should observe the second one, especially. And there's another technical, the terms are, it's right in the Sanskrit of the verse, purva vidhi. Purva means before. Purva vidhi. Something like purva sangskar. Something that you do before you perform a ritual. Purva sangskar. Or puryascharya vidhi. Something that one must do before some activity. And then there's the one that you do at the end. It's para vidhi. So, of the two, one may praise because that's the first one, but not criticize. And then Prabhupada explains the real meaning. Where is it? Yeah. The actual injunction is that one may praise but should not criticize. When you respect somebody, you may or may not, but it's a natural thing to express that respect. Just like we did this for in a number of cases in our recent Temple President GBC meeting. I'm sure most of you are aware we've now completed the whole process of that terrible child abuse case that was huge problem for our whole society, and it's now finished. It's the case that at the settlement, everything is now done. It's behind us. So we had, you know, some appreciation of the leaders who didn't fix their roof or mortgage their some houses, or in some case they sold property to help take care of this thing. They made huge sacrifice. But now it's behind us. And there are activities in place to prevent or to immediately respond to any future similar problem. Both prevent and immediate response. And so many systems to help give protection to children. I can share this with you. Now that that's behind us, we decided to put in place three different things. And one of those three different things is, for North America, we have a child protection office director that receives some funds to do the service that she does for the whole of North America. Anyway, there's many details, but appreciation went to many people for the sacrifice that they made. When I was in Chicago recently, we had the head cook who's been there for probably 15 years, just very quietly doing his service in the kitchen, and we invited him to come upstairs and just appreciated the wonderful work that he does to provide nice prasadam, not just for this festival but for the deities and for all the programs. And he practically broke down and started crying. He was so moved. He wasn't expecting that to happen, but so to remain neutral, you don't praise and you don't criticize. But the appreciation wasn't just going for the behavior of the hours that he spends in the kitchen cooking, but it's for his Krishna consciousness, the steadfastness with which he does his service. And once a week he dresses the deities. And you can tell which day it is. Even I don't know which day it is. I can tell just from seeing the deities. He's fantastic. Didi Dresser. And that's really where his heart is, but his time is in the kitchen. But it's also for the deities. Anyway, so in Vaishnava circles, praise or appreciate, expressing your respect for another devotee, that's nice. It's part of our exchanges of love with one another. That makes it a little difficult sometimes for the person who's being praised. Because what are you supposed to do with praise? Get proud? Or say, no, 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 no. What are you supposed to do? We can spend a little time on that topic, but first, it's that part is okay. You know, within modestly, not excessively. But the other is not okay. And why it's not okay, Krishna explains to Uddhava. Your own self-interest becomes lost. And, you know, besides it's Vaishnava Parad, Sadhu Ninda, it destroys the effect of the holy name to purify you. Because the way the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this is Nama Prabhu doesn't like it. Therefore, it's one of the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name to vilify or criticize the sadhu. So if you want to have stronger relationships with devotees, respect. And supposing there's something, so where does respect go? We'll do it again. They're part and parcel of Krishna. Amongst all the parts and parcels of Krishna, possums and trees and birds and butterflies and other human beings, there's bhakti in their heart. There's some attraction for Krishna in their heart. Respect goes there. And some mercy that they receive from Krishna in their ability to do some nice service for Krishna. Their capacity to be self-sacrificing and do nicely for Krishna and continue to do nicely over a period of time. Respect goes there. And you want to strengthen relationships with devotees, extend respect to them. And what if there's something that's less than pure bhakti in their heart or less than pure bhakti in their behavior? If respect, if the fundamental, just like anyone that you have some relationship with, if there's some fundamental respect, then you, starting from the position of respect, you address yourself to that spark of bhakti that's in their heart, or flame of bhakti, or blaze of bhakti that's in their heart, and express appreciation, respect for that. And in that mood of respect, here is something that, were you to attend to, it might help your Krishna consciousness in the short term and in the long term. On the basis of relationship where there is respect, you're in a much better position to be able to be of assistance to that person to make the improvement, whatever that improvement might be. Because there's respect, and respect breeds mutual respect, so that the message that you have to impart, it's received warmly, positively. And it can't just be cosmetic, because everybody knows what that is. It's pretense. It's something, when there's genuine respect that's there, then the relationship is strong, and you, in a mood of service, can assist another devotee. That's what we have as opportunities for service, is other devotees to serve. Dasa, dasa, anudas. that's our teaching, and that's how we live our teaching. So there's so much. It's a nice, rich topic. Many, many things to say, and exercises even that can be done to strengthen respect and strengthen relationships. Things one can do to make relationships more respectful. Things that you can do that can erode or break the respect that you may hold or not hold in the view of another person. That's that thought. Just start with just discussing the topic itself, the quality of respect. What is it? And how does it strengthen relationships? Okay, I've gone over time already. Any comments or discussion? Yes?
I wonder how can we help one who is somewhat like Ramachandra Puri, is just looking for faults and devotees and seven are in places and they are private. How can we help such a person?
Depends on the devotee. Depends on the devotee. You know, somebody that's hardcore like Ramchandra Puri, even Lord Chaitanya wasn't able to help him. What Lord Chaitanya did was not give him reason. And even when Lord Chaitanya cut his eating in half because he was being criticized and his followers for eating more than necessary, he then became criticized for eating not enough. You're becoming skinny. How are you going to maintain your austerities and your rigors of sannyas life? You can't eat too little. You can't eat too much. You know, you just, you know. But Lord Chaitanya maintained, Lord Chaitanya's reply was respect. He said, I'm so fortunate to have a godbrother like you who is so kind to instruct me how to maintain my proper vows, my proper practices. He didn't waver from the position of respect. So, if there's an individual like that, that's that radical, maybe there's nothing you can do. Or, here's another option, somebody that is superior to that person who they look up to, maybe that person can help them. Maybe. Another is engage with that person in the activities of hearing and chanting about Krishna, because that's the positive means of purification. Do those things with that person without any of the other, hey, what's going on with your criticizing people? So that the soul can become purified and the strength of the relationship can be enriched. That was the verse from yesterday evening. From the Navyogendras to Maharaj Nimi.
Just a follow up. One of my associates is like that, more or less, and I sometimes feel like I should stay away from him and don't avoid anything, talk too much with him, call him. I can feel sometimes.
Intimately associating with such persons can have its debilitating effects, sure. But the positive association, let it be in Krishna consciousness by design. And And if someone starts speaking to you about blah, 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 let them know. I can't hear that. And whatever else you're saying, you know, I'm not advanced enough to hear these kinds of things. I think you should speak to somebody that's more advanced, because I can't, my creeper of devotion will be hurt. I can't process this. Please take it to someone that's in a more advanced than me. Or, the principle that I live, here's what described in Chaitanya Charitamrita about a grand disciple of Gadadhar Pandit. His name is Haridas Pandit, and he was the pujari of Govindaji, I believe, that requested or gave his blessings to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami to compile Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Haridas Pandit is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that he was the kind of Vaishnava who no one would say anything against another devotee in his presence, because he just wouldn't hear it. He was not only spiritually elevated, that was the main thing. Just that kind of conversation didn't come near him because he was so spiritually elevated. But if someone spoke, he wouldn't hear it. I don't know what the words he spoke was, but that kind of sound vibration didn't happen in his presence. Become spiritually qualified yourself is the answer. And by that spiritual qualification, the others' things may reduce. I find in the circle that I move in, people don't tell me those things because I just don't have any interest in those things. I'm not a good listener when it comes to those things. So I don't know so many of the gossip things that people talk about and the criticizing things that people talk about. I don't know about it. I'm not interested in knowing about it. And they know I'm not interested, so they don't come and bring it to me. Something else? Yes?
Guru Maharaj, thank you very much for this nice topic. I have three points or three questions or comments rather.
Okay.
One is the charity begins at home. So how to respect oneself? And the second point is the familiarity based content.
Let's do one at a time, because that's it. The first one is a big topic. It's a stand on its own topic. It's so big. And people that are conversant with the topic of respect, that is, self-respect is essential to respecting others, in short, what they say. And the self-respect is not just how you feel others are towards you, but more specifically, it's how you feel about yourself. Now, there's the egoism, self-confidence kind of respect that doesn't fit in Vaishnava culture. So self-respect in Vaishnava culture has to go to something more basic, like my existence as a spirit soul meant for serving Krishna eternally. And that's something no one can take from me. I even can't take it from me. even I try, or someone tries it, it's intrinsic. So that's the core of self-respect. And what is my worthiness to be in a relationship with Krishna? Like Prahlad Maharaj, it's the merciful nature of the Lord. That's it. That's the self-worthiness, and therefore the basis of self-respect. That I can approach the Lord. All the representatives of the Lord who are carrying the mercy of the Lord and enter into that with dignity. Not pride, but spiritual dignity. Because of the all-merciful nature of the Supreme Lord. And that's where that's the foundation of self-respect upon which self-respect is built. The rest of what self-respect is. That is, there's nothing about me as on my own, but it's the merciful nature of Krishna and the representatives of Krishna. That's the basis of self-respect. And therefore, I can do things that require qualification even when I'm not qualified. In Prahlad's case, it was offering prayers to the Supreme Lord in front of the demigods. But he could do that because it was their order for him to do so. And because the Lord is merciful. So we can do things with self-respect with that foundation. You take away the foundation and you either have nothing or you have something imaginary, a house of cards or a flower in the sky or phantasmagoria, some hallucination, something that's not substantial and then collapses. Big topic, and much more can be said about it. So, just the reset button is spiritual conception of who we are. We're the eternal servant of Krishna. We're meant, our existence is to serve Krishna. Even though I'm very tiny and insignificant and imperfect in so many ways, my existence is to serve Krishna. And that's the basis of self-respect. And then I can see others having that same purpose of their existence. Now, how can I be of service to them? To serve Krishna. All right? Now, charity begins at home. That's the next one?
No.
Next one is
familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah, familiarity breeds contempt. So, usually we start with having mutual respect, and as time goes on and we interact with each other more and more, and it goes on and on for number of years, maybe months or years, we start to disrespect each other, we start to have
something
basically. So it doesn't continue. So what is the process of making sure that this does not get...
And the answer is respect. Respect is the antidote for familiarity. So we'll just do it again, as you did. We're social beings by nature. In the spiritual world, we're social beings. We're with others. Krishna and Krishna's devotees. We're social beings by nature. We have that. It's a need. It's a psychological need, but it's also a spiritual need. We need association of others because it's our nature to serve others, to serve Krishna in the association of others. For spiritual progress, we need association of devotees. So, what happens? You get association of devotees, and then you start to find, you get closer and closer and closer and closer, and then you start to find out where this person, or persons, plural, where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are, because of that closeness. Now, there's the weaknesses. Now, how do I address myself to the fact that others have weaknesses, which of course I knew before I knew what the details of them are, but now I know the details of them, what their weaknesses are. Now, how do I protect myself from contempt now that I've had this close association? And the answer is respect. Because I see that intrinsic worth in them. Therefore, respect. That's the antidote. And in that, so how do you foster respect? That's another next class. But it's something that must be there. It's simply expressed, you invest respect, you invest contemplation on that individual over a period of time with that spiritual conception besides the package. Because it's the package that's flawed. It's not the soul. The soul made some wrong turns. First, turning away from Krishna. And so, it's a mess. But now here's that same soul trying to turn again to Krishna. So that we respect that. And on that basis, here's some shortcoming. What can I do to help in a mood of service with that shortcoming? Because of the respect, I want to do that. And my mood of service, the self-respect, is I'm down here and the goal is up here. So I'm keeping this humble mood that I should be in service. All the time, always. That's my identity. So how do I serve this person in this situation? And even if I don't know the answer to that question, if that's my mood, it protects me from becoming a critic of that person, criticizing them, judging them. And we all know what that is. So that the respect is the antidote. And from the respect comes the behavior and speech that's appropriate instead of criticizing. The behavior of service and the language of service and the mood of service. Humble service. It works. Light is stronger than darkness. It works. You need a third?
Third is Maharaj.
You got a good memory. I can't remember the second one. Go ahead.
So sometimes it is easier to respect someone. It's probably a kind of intrinsic that okay, we respect, we show the respect, even if it is not like. Maybe inside, but just be like to show it. But it is very difficult when somebody else shows us disrespect.
Shows us disrespect or respect or both.
Disrespect.
It's hard when they show you respect too.
Okay. How to deal with the situations when people are disrespecting myself or somebody?
Well, what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Matras parshas tu kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukada agama payo nityas. What's the last line? Ah? Tangs tatiksha sva bharata. Tatiksha means? Tolerate. That's, 101. Because it's duality. It's specifically the beginning part. It's born of sense perception. The senses and the sense objects read oh, this is disrespect. It's on the platform of the body and in the realm of duality, the body and the mind, in the realm of duality. It has nothing to do with the soul. So when it's over here in this realm, what do? You tolerate it, minimally. Then you can go another notch, and you can go another notch or another notch. But if you tolerate it, because it's the nature of the place we're in. Sometimes people will honor you when you're not even deserving honor. Sometimes people will criticize you, dishonor you, when it's undeserving. It's the same either way. Supposing they're dishonoring you when you deserve to be dishonored, or praising you when you deserve to be praised, what do you do with that? Same thing. It's in this realm of duality. That's from the Gyan perspective. Then there's the bhakti perspective. When they were criticizing Haridas Thakur, how did he take it? Oh, they're criticizing me. I'm getting out of here. These people are aparatis. They don't know who I am. I'm Haridas Thakur. You know how many rounds I chant every day? You know how humble I am? So that I can chant that many rounds a day? What's wrong with these people? So another response to your question is, continue to look to the light. The principle is very simple. Where am I going? If I receive some criticism or some dishonor, is there something that Krishna wants from me in this circumstance? Either some way I can be of service to this person, or some way I can improve myself, or is there something so that your thought goes there to the light? How is this intended by Krishna to help me get to the spiritual goal? And the answer might be any number of things. But let that be your guiding light, guiding purpose. You may not even have an answer to that question. But let that, you know, keep going to the light. Maybe the lesson is, hey, this place looked good, but it's not. I thought, hey, I'm going to enjoy it. Look at this, I'm getting all this dishonor. I guess I made a wrong choice coming to this place, because it's the nature of the place. Then let me redirect my attention to go to Krishna. So maybe that's one of the lessons that Krishna's the purposes for the dishonor is to help you understand this is the wrong place to be. Not I want to go to the place where there's honor, but I want to go to a place where there isn't duality. I'm not going to be feeling this or feeling that because the wind blew this way and then the wind blew that way. Rise above it. By taking shelter in Sat. Om Tat Sat. Yes? Upananda?
I'm wondering, Maharaj, if the follow-up of the same question is probably asked. When someone humiliates us, you mentioned it, could be Krishna is teaching us something in smashing or ego, it may be.
So many somethings.
Could it also be, could it also be karmic reduction?
Sure. That's one of the things. tate nukampam susamikshamano. You just tolerate it, expecting this is my deserve, coming from I don't know what, something back there, and here I'm getting. But let my mind not budge one inch from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Pradeep?
Maharaj, on this, the question which was raised by Prabhu as well, whether it is between a devotee and devotee or within the home, if there arise any conflict of interest, how to deal with that with respect?
Well, let's go back and hit into the if I value this relationship, then I place the relationship above the conflict of interest issue at stake. The relationship is most important. And the other person knows. If they don't know, I want them to know. I'll express it in n number of ways, not just at the moment, but throughout the course of the relationship. The relationship is most important. The other things, it's less important. There's an interest and there's an interest. Because we're individuals, we have some the same, some different. We'll work it out, because the relationship is the most important thing. I'm committed to the relationship. And when the other person, as well as yourself, know that's the platform, you work it out. And so a very simple formula, love and trust, give and take. Give and take means sometimes it goes this way, and sometimes it goes that way, and neither of us are keeping score. Well, wait a minute, you've gotten your interest so many times, and you know, I counted them, look at this list. And what about me? But if the mutual, the scorekeeping thing debilitates love and trust. But if it's genuine respect, then sometimes and sometimes. And it's okay. And that's a relationship. If there isn't respect, you're not going to have a relationship. You'll be competing. How many times I get scores on my side? Now, in a husband-wife relationship, there's the on the one hand and there's on the other hand. You know, in the husband-wife relationship, the position should be the husband makes decisions. But a good husband is going to certainly listen to what not only his wife but the other dependents say. And when respect is there, it will sometimes take precedence over what my interest is. Because I respect the person, and it's important to them. I may not even agree with them, but I'll honor it because it's so important to them. And one of the lessons of teaching children, besides behaviors and being polite, to teach a child respect, gratitude, is to show it. Not just between husband and wife, but to show it towards them. And then they learn, they feel it. And then they learn the quality, not just the behavior. It becomes part of their, and that's what families do. While there's familiarity and intimacy, there's respect. I value your, I value the relationship, and I value you, and I value that you have separate interests. And let's take a look at it together. Even I'm, you know, the husband or the father. Let me hear what you have to say, because I value you, I respect you. Well, my perspective is different, but that's okay. Yours takes precedent. Some cases and some, you know, give and take. Something else? Pararupa?
Is there a room for choosing relationships?
Sure.
Or is it like...
We have different kinds of, different confidential natures of relationships, sure.
Because many times relationships are defined by like superiors, and many times proximity,
sure,
and other factors,
sure,
that come into picture.
Sure. Sure. It's completely natural.
Okay, so would long distance relationship?
It's a different kind. Yes, it's a different kind. I have long distance relationships, and they're really strong. Real strong. Mahamantra. Dinishta is next. Okay. Mahamantra.
You are explaining about absorption in some of the devotees, how to glorify the Lord and I was examining some of the devotees' qualities, how they are absorbed, and that's my thinking, that like it's a very positive impetus is coming up. Do I have to try for that kind of absorption?
I'm not sure what you're asking, but it sounds like, from your question, it sounds like something that just happens naturally. Let's supposing, Kalakanta was describing this about, he was in Chicago when Prabhupada was there with 12 buses and the Radha Damodar parties, and Apoorva was in the kitchen and he had never cooked before, and Apoorva said, "Hey, you want to come help me cook for Prabhupada?" And he didn't know anything about cooking. He said, "Sure. Just tell me what to do." So he wasn't striving for absorption. He was just happy to be serving Prabhupada in the kitchen. Then some other things happen. So the beginning is not you strive for absorption. You just try to do the service nicely. And in course of time, things will happen.
We learn about, we try to practice Karma Yoga, and we think that the soul and then mind intelligence and our senses and then material body. And we make rules for our senses and we follow that in order to keep us on track and having our day and not agitate as much.
Right.
But then there comes criticism and there comes depreciation. And when you get criticized, you actually tend to work harder and you improve yourself. But at the same time, when you get praised, again, it's the same thing, because now you have made a standard which you have to live up to. You're still improving. So would that be considered as sense gratification?
Yes. Yes. Both are. And the standard is, where's Krishna in the picture? Where's Krishna's satisfaction? Somebody last night was speaking about, from a different vantage point, somebody that's in this country, well, it was a Chinese girl, in this country for developing her career. And now she was initiated before she came, but there's a struggle, career, Krishna consciousness. And just career development standing on its own, what's that? But does it have a place in Krishna consciousness? Yes, if how can this be used to satisfy and serve Krishna? Not how I can have instead of not have. And that's a cultivation, because this career interest or whatever it is that, you know, I don't like being criticized, and I don't like, you know, having to continue to perform on a standard because I've just been praised. Put all that to the side, and what's Krishna's interest? Do I need to spend less time with the performance of some activity that I just got praised for, and a little more time on quality hearing and chanting, so that I can maintain and enhance the standard of that service by my Krishna consciousness, and ultimately not just get some gold stars by my name on my report card, but I can go back to Godhead because my heart is pure with Krishna's interest only. And thinking that way is the beginning of making further progress, and not thinking that way is standing still, not making progress. Some progress, because I'm continuing my devotional service, but my motivation may not be the right one. I want to counteract the criticism, or I want to continue to bask in the praise. I don't want people to praise and then all of a sudden there's no more praise. I want to keep getting praise. So it's consciousness is not right. Even the performance may continue, but the consciousness will go. It's Prabhupada's phrase is, you're either progressing or regressing. There's no standing still in Krishna consciousness. There always has to be this striving for the light, striving for the goal. If you're not striving for the goal, the current is moving downstream, like the river, flowing downstream. Dinishta?
It seems like in material circles, people say this phrase, they have earned the respect of their peers.
Yeah.
So it seems like in a devotional life, it takes a different respect. It's not something that you earn, but it's something that you give. I'm a little confused about that. It's something that you're giving to the others without them earning it.
Well, in Utopia, then there's just respect, because you're a spirit soul. In the world of duality, utopia isn't existing, and people are not respecting simply because, let's just go up a couple of notches, and there's bhakti in your heart, and you're trying to further your bhakti and thereby diminish the other things. Therefore, respect. That's not utopia, and that's not where most people are either. Where most people are is we're still struggling with holding material conceptions and evaluating one another by those material conceptions, not going to the bhakti that's in the heart and how the individual is trying to grow the bhakti that's in their heart. A sadhu, a truly saintly person, is one who is just nurturing, you know, fanning the spark. That's their life. Little spark and fan the spark. Not how much smoke is there, just fan the spark. But so the phrase of earning respect is common, yes, in this world. Going back to some of the examples that I gave, you know, aside from the head pujari or the temple president who's thinking, there's all kinds of devotees in those three temples I mentioned who are meditating on, they're not the person at the top who's meditating on, there are so many luminaries who are making their plans to do this service, to do that service, and so as much as we individually, or me personally, or each one of you individually can look to the devotion that's within the heart of the individual and seeing how the individual is trying, greater, lesser, and sometimes greater and sometimes lesser, but you know, the sine curve is going on, but to some degree striving, then it's not, you're not earning anything. It's there because of the bhakti effort that you're putting forward. Going down a little, then it is something that we earn for the others, the rest of the devotee population. It's just one of those things in the world of duality. So now it goes back, you know, whether there's respect or disrespect, what do you do? That those questions have already been asked. People are wanting you to earn their respect. If you don't earn my respect, you don't get my respect. Lady. Ma'am. Mataji. Prabhuji. That's from this standard. And that's, you know, that's all right, because there's something in the heart of that person, assuming there's some spark of bhakti. That's just, you know, according to our scriptures, that's prakriti bhakta. And then madhyama bhakta and uttama bhakta. But there's bhakti. So there, to that person, some respect is going. It's just not a very elevated position. So what do we do? We try to set an example of another standard, not I'm up here and you're down there, not that kind of smugness, but as a service. Set a standard by example, how to respect. And how to be respectable, worthy of respect. For persons that need to have respect earned before they're going to offer respect. And they're judging, in other words, back to this, or the, you know, the Krishna's instruction to Uddhava, they're judging by the external, the behavior. Or it's some practice that they're doing. So, that's an unfortunate, according to what Krishna is telling Uddhava, that's an unfortunate position because their own self-interest is covered and lost. So, not wanting to see that, we'd like their real self-interest to be awakened. So, be worthy of the, just like Lord Chaitanya took sannyas for the persons who were criticizing him, so they wouldn't suffer from criticizing him, he took sannyas. Because by social culture, they respect him instead of criticize him, because now he's a sannyasi. He's not just one of us, a teacher, a Brahmin. He's now a sannyasi, so we offer respect. So doing things because it will help another person, even in that unfortunate position, that was one of the earlier questions, how do you help the Ramchandrapuris? Acting in such a way that there's no room for criticism, and then still they're criticized, and that's okay. But try to do, if they're just chronic, that they're going to do it anyway, but try to be above criticism. As a service, not just getting away from the criticism. And that's the right consciousness to be in any case. I'm taking way more than my time. I'm going to end. It's 20 minutes after one. So what? One of the functions of having interactive sessions. Two of the functions. One of the functions is just by interacting, you get to know people you didn't know. You're building a relationship or coming to understand somebody who you may not have known so much about before. Or people, persons you've known about, some of their values and things that are important to them, you'll learn. So the relationships strengthen. That's one of the functions. And another is taking this theoretical and integrating it, bringing it in. It's one of the functions of what's about to happen. So I'm going to turn things over to Jagatananda, take my knee upstairs and do some things to help my knee. I'm going to one of the things I'll do when I go upstairs, there's a little letter that I'm going to, rather than having to spend a half an hour with so many people saying, I'm going to one letter that says, this is what's going on with my knee, and what am I doing, how did it happen, what I'm doing about it, and so I don't have to say it so many times. So you know what's going on. I've got a good plan. And I'm taking it as a knock on the door that says, are you ready? This is one part of something that you've been used to working and it's not working. You know that it's not working. You know what that means? How long before the whole thing is taken from you? Are you ready? To go back to Godhead? Are you fixed in consciousness? Nothing but that, one thing? If you have some more business to take care of, better take care of it. That's the message. That's the message I'm taking. I've got so many things I've got to do, but what's the most important thing I've got to do? That's the most important thing. That's the message. Okay. So, Jagatananda, take it away. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.